Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to GeneOliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I'm talking with Jen Wagner. Jen is a graphic and font designer. She is a top creator of fonts on Creative Market and also offers online courses and training to help other designers build a successful business. Our business has had the privilege of working with Jen over the past 5 years, and her designs are usually at the heart of any large project we ever launch. I've always told Jen that her gift is making everything she touches more beautiful. That is definitely true. Jen, I'm excited to talk today and to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Would you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your business?
So I am Jen. I am a type designer, so I design fonts, and I've been doing that for the last 4 years. I also teach courses for people who want to learn how to design, and I also teach courses for designers who want to learn how to make passive income with digital products.
Would you share how you started creating fonts and the impact that that had on your design business?
I started creating fonts during a pretty severe freelance lull. I had quit my job and kind of resolved that I was going to commit to making it out on my own as a freelance designer. Mm-hmm. And that did not go to plan, as most things do. And your business actually was the only client I had for 7 months. And having these grand visions of having my own successful design business and maybe even starting a design firm and bringing on a team. And I just had this great vision of what I wanted this to look like. And when it didn't happen immediately, it was extremely frustrating and stressful. And so I ended up getting wrapped up in the money side of it, had a very, very, very unhealthy perspective on my self-worth and the connection to that and the money I made. And I ended up exploring the idea of creating fonts when my husband very lovingly told me to stop pursuing the money and just make something that I want to make. Mm-hmm. And I had so much spare time because I did not have much work that I ended up just kind of pursuing the passion that I had for typography. I'd done a lot of hand lettering and stuff up to that point and bought some font creating software and just learned how to do it. And my first products were not good at all, but I put them out and up for sale and they started making sales, and I ended up shifting my focus to that full time. And I've been doing that ever since for 4 years.
Most of us need to diversify in our business. And for you, that's doing some client work, licensing work, online classes and ebooks, and then your font creation and sales. So what does that rhythm look like for you? And when do you know when you're too far off in one or the other? And how do you honor your own creativity when others, including our business, want your services?
So that rhythm is more fluid than it is an actual rhythm. I have to prioritize day by day what needs to be done, what's urgent and important versus what's just urgent or what's just important. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of having to prioritize different tasks across different businesses. But it's pretty clear to especially my husband when I'm off. Mm-hmm. I do get a little short-tempered. I think the main thing I've noticed is that I just get really spacey. It's hard for me to pay attention, especially to things outside of the work buzz that's happening in my head. Did I respond to this email? Did I check my ads for this? Have I made sure everything is in order. And it feels like when I am off balance, those are the thoughts that are taking over my life outside of work. And I'm also usually coming to the end of every day completely exhausted, mm-hmm. unable to have anything else to give. And I think you can see it in my work too, where usually if I am in that headspace, the stuff I'm creating isn't as good. And I'll create something more out of obligation to completing a task than I will to actually like satisfying a need that my audience has. Mm-hmm. And then that's doubly frustrating because then those products don't perform well because people can feel that. And they feel when you're off balance. And I think it's important not only for your own mental health, but for the health of your audience to make sure that you're doing whatever you can to make sure you're in balance so that your creativity is healthy and productive for them too.
Yeah, I agree. What does that process look like to go from idea to creation of a font? And how does it feel when you stumble upon your fonts out in the wild?
So creating a font usually starts with a vision that I have of like one or two letters and sometimes how they interact. And so I just put one out recently that started with an SS combination. And I just really loved the idea of these two S's flowing together pretty seamlessly. Mm-hmm. And in font world, that's called a ligature. So most fonts actually have them, but they're a little bit more subtle. So I took that first idea and then used that to develop every other character in the set. So it usually starts with like one or two characters that act almost like the parents, and then the children look similar. Like they should all look like a family. They should all look related. And so it usually starts small and ends up becoming bigger. Other times it'll be, I've been inspired by architecture before. I've been inspired even by music before. So it really just depends on the font and where I'm at mentally. But usually it starts with one or two letters that I can kind of see in my head and am excited to develop further. And seeing them in the wild is crazy. Like, because I know I'm making sales. I'm seeing those sales every day, but I don't know who these people are. I don't know who's using them, and I don't know where they're going to end up. And so there have been a lot of times where I will be on Instagram and I'll get an ad for, like the most recent one was this soap that I thought was beautiful and it caught my eye, and I held it there for a second and was like, oh my gosh, that's my work. And it's surreal. Like I think.
And you've had big brands use your fonts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've had Bath and Body Works. We've had Facebook, Better Homes and Gardens, Minted, Papyrus, like American Greetings. So many different companies. And even then I'm just dealing with the licensing side. I still don't usually get to see the designs right. until I stumble on them. So it's a lot of fun and it's still pretty surreal for someone who tends to have a low creative self-esteem. Like it's very validating to actually see these companies using my work.
I think that's actually really good that you said that, because I think everyone needs to hear that. That's a creative, because I don't know many creatives that don't have that, or that imposter syndrome, or mm-hmm. is this for real? And so, you know, sometimes, especially because I do so much with people like that are building their business, they think that that's something unique to them. And I always try to stress it's unique to all of us.
Right.
And even though you have a very successful business, I think it's so important for people to hear that you say that, mm-hmm. and that you struggle with that, and that you have that imposter syndrome too.
And it never goes away.
No, you learn to move past it, and you learn to still continue the work you're supposed to do. But I don't think it goes away. Goes away.
No, it never has.
Yeah.
An old friend.
Yeah. I think you and your husband, Aaron, have a very special and supportive relationship. You are both huge cheerleaders for each other's dreams. Were you always this way? And how do you make sure you are both pursuing your gifts while also supporting the dreams of the other spouse?
We do have a very special relationship.
You really do.
It's something that I swing back and forth between taking for granted and thinking I could never take this for granted. Like it's just the most amazing thing to have a partnership like that. And so I am so grateful. We started dating when I was 17 and got married when I was 20. And so we were both extremely young when we got together and extremely young when we got married. And I think that something that's really helped us even throughout our marriage is that since we started dating, we were having difficult conversations and we were not afraid of entering that space with each other. And so before we even got married, Aaron kind of sat me down and was like, I need you to know that this whole music thing for me isn't a phase. Like I plan on doing this for the rest of my life. And I need you to know that I will always work to take care of you. And I will always work to make sure that you have a roof over your head and food on the table. But that's the only thing I can guarantee. Like, I don't know if this is going to make a lot of money. And I don't know what this is going to look like in our life down the road, but it's not going away. And I sat him down separately a different time and said, hey, I need you to know that I love business and always have, and it's something that will always be a part of my life, and getting a conventional job just isn't really in the cards for me. So I need you to be okay with the fact that I will probably always be at least partially self-employed. And especially like growing up in the environment that I did, I also wanted to make sure he knew that I might make more money than him. And I need him to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. And that I don't see that as, it doesn't have to be this hierarchy thing. Like we're a creative team and our businesses are our businesses. And so we just, from the beginning, we're having those conversations and making sure we were on the same page with each other. And that was, I mean, while we were dating. And so that's just flowed into our marriage, where when we've had to have hard conversations about our work or our finances or growing our businesses or anything like that, we're still able to approach it as a team, because like we are consistently reminding each other like, hey, I'm your business partner in this, even though I'm not creating the music with you. And you're my business partner in this, even though you're not creating the designs with me. Like we're a team.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with its own ebb and flow too, because sometimes one business is doing really well and the other isn't, and then they'll just flip, and there's a lot, it can be very tumultuous sometimes. And that definitely has an emotional effect. Which is why those conversations are so important. But I think he's always done a great job at supporting me while pursuing his gifts, because we're consistently having conversations. And we also know each other well enough to where I can see when he's creating something out of obligation and when he is frustrated with the work he's doing, but feels like he has to make money. And I can call him out on that, and he can do the same thing with me and say like, you're pretty testy. Like, I think you need to take a break from this and just go make something for yourself and go paint or go do something to the house, like do something other than work to get your creativity back. And I think that like that level of support is what has helped us both separately stay healthy while growing our businesses and while like still being mentally there and emotionally there enough to support the other in their thing as well.
And I think you have deep, deep respect for one another and your giftings, mm-hmm. But you also have extreme honesty within your relationship. And so I think it's just really been amazing to watch both of you support each other that way. And it's just going to continue to grow. You were recently accepted into an incredible mentorship program in New York City for type creators. Can you tell everyone about this mentorship, how you heard about it, and your own process, like design-wise and also emotionally, of submitting to be accepted?
Yeah. So this type design program, it's called Type at Cooper. It is a graduate level design program at the Cooper Union in Manhattan. And being accepted was pretty surreal. I don't have my degree in design. I have my degree in marketing. And I never took a design course in college. Like I am extremely self-taught. And so knowing that this is, it's a grad school, like four designers, and the application required a design degree, and then the asterisk said, or a similar experience. So they're looking for people of that caliber, and I'm still dealing with the imposter syndrome. So the entire process of submitting to this school was like, who do I think I am to think that I am capable of making it, let alone just like getting my work seen by these people. I've also, as someone who's done type design for 4 years, being self-taught, was so terrified to submit that work to actual professionals in that field, because I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Like I don't know what I'm doing right. I have no grid. All I know is this looks good or this looks bad. And I've just been navigating this learning experience kind of on my own. And so submitting to a school was really terrifying, very stressful, and being accepted was just surreal. Because it's a 5-week intensive program. So like 80-hour weeks for 5 weeks in New York. And they only accept 16 students a year. And so it was an honor to be accepted. A bummer that the program is canceled this year.
For this year because of COVID-19.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But thankfully they're furloughing accepted students to next summer. So we'll be able to do it next summer, hopefully, if everything stays
healthy. I think the thing I would like for our listeners to take away is that there's probably a majority of you listening that there's something on your heart. There's something that you want to pursue, but it's scary. You want to put something out there, but you don't know how it's going to be accepted. And I remember looking at your submission and saying to you, how did you know to do that? Like, how did they have a template? Did they have something that guided you of knowing how to put together your ideas and your fonts to submit? And you said no. And so I think what I would love for you to share, if there is a way to kind of like bring it into an easy way to share it with other people, is when you have to walk something out and put it out into the world, and there is no hand-holding, right?
Right.
That, and you're just like everybody else saying, I'm an imposter here. Like, who do I think I am? Where do you go within yourself to still, because see, everybody has those thoughts, Jen, but not mm-hmm. everybody says, but you know what? I'm going to do it anyways. And yeah. I'm going to dig down and I'm going to grab for this. And that is literally one of the biggest reasons of success and not having success. Is Absolutely. The person that says, I am going to reach for this anyways, even though I'm scared, even though I feel like an imposter, even though I don't have anybody holding my hand, even though I don't actually know the right way to do this. Mm-hmm. And so what does that look like for you when you say, I'm going to grab for it anyways?
That's a great question. It's not easy. And I think that's the first thing that I've had to remember time and time again, is like, this isn't easy. And if it was, everyone would do it. I think that process looks like just doing it scared. Mm-hmm. And having to realize too that this is a big deal. Like applying to this school, it's equally terrifying to me on both sides, because if I don't get accepted, the fear of failure is horrifying. Even though I could justify it as much as I want. Well, I'm not professionally trained. I don't have any education in this. So being accepted or not being accepted isn't that bad, I guess. But it is. And then the flip side of being accepted is also terrifying, because now I am going to be in a room mm-hmm. with people who are working on their master's degrees in design. I'm going to leave my life in Tennessee for 6 weeks and move to New York, which is also terrifying, and spend all of this money on my tuition and my supplies and a place to stay, which is not cheap in New York, and drag my husband along with me and hope that he doesn't hate me by the time it's over because he hasn't seen me in 5 weeks. But it's just all scary. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be easier to do nothing. But when we were in high school, Aaron used to say to do what makes the better story. Mm-hmm. And I think about that all the time. Like I could play it safe and wonder what could have been. Mm-hmm. Or I can do it scared and take a step out and see what happens. And if I fail, great. Like I've learned something and I can do it better next time. And if I succeed, great. There are still things I can do better next time. Like
do what makes a better story.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
It's great.
Little 17-year-old Aaron.
I want to dive into talking about design, and I know so many listening are business owners and creatives, and it can be so hard to know where to put time and money on our sites. So what do you think is a huge priority when it comes to paying for design services versus doing it yourself?
As someone who is both a designer and a business owner outside of design, I think you need to figure out how much your time is worth. If you have no experience in design and you're going to tackle the task of figuring out how to do it yourself, all of that time is now taken away from your business and actually doing the thing that you're wanting to do. If you are wanting to be a consultant or a coach or something, and you decide you want to do your own branding, that's great. And there's a lot of resources out there to learn how to do that, but you're losing that time.
Yeah.
And I also understand that design work is very expensive, and usually it's not the ideal way to go about it doing yourself, but it's the essential way. And that's just where I would say do the minimal you can until you can hire someone else to do it. Like I'm very passionate about minimum viable product, which is like the best thing I learned in college, getting my marketing degree. It's the minimum that your product needs to be to take it to the market. So like my husband and I started a candle company, super fun. We have 3 cents. We probably should have started with one, like minimum viable product, get that one dialed. We're going to hire our design out to someone else because I wanted someone who is very gifted at that to have their hands on it, knowing that I would eventually want to change it if I had done it myself. The problem was that the timeline didn't quite match up, so I ended up needing to do it myself. But even the way I went about that was like, okay, I'm just not going to put too much into this because we have too much to do. So let's make this as minimal as possible, Helvetica font, call it good, and then let's just get it out and we can change it later. So I think it depends entirely on the person and on their business and financially what it looks like to be able to get professional design work, but I think it will always be worth it when you get the right person, and you'll love it more and value it more when you pay for it too. Like, that's just kind of the truth of it.
What are a few mistakes that you see businesses doing on their websites?
A lot of it is language based. So if I don't immediately know what you do and how to get it, I'm going to bounce off your site.
Right.
And most people spend so many words telling you what they do in the wrong places on their site. And people skim, like they don't want to read your website. They just want to know immediately what you do, what you're offering, why it's better than this other website they were just on, and how they can get it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of takes it back to like being as minimal as possible. Like, and minimal is probably the wrong word. I think efficient is a better word.
And clear. Just have as much clarity as possible when people come to your site.
Yeah. Donald Miller says, if you confuse, you lose.
Yeah.
And that's actually been a really big element in helping my conversion rate on my own site, where I was very confusing about what I was offering. And now it's just fonts, like modern fonts for graphic designers and DIYers.
Yeah.
And that's simple to understand.
I always encourage business owners to create a brand guide to limit fonts, color palettes, etc. So there are so many gorgeous new trends in front of us all the time. How do you as a designer keep yourself from following so many of them, and how often do you give your designs a refresh? So how often is too often when you're trying to create a trusted and consistent visual voice within your business? And because I know we like to tweak, but there's a difference between redesigns and little tiny tweaks and things like that. So what's your advice?
I'm kind of in a unique position where I get to follow the design trends in my products, but my branding has been consistent. So I think
That's very true. Your fonts are what are trending.
Uh-huh.
But then what is on your site is consistent branding.
Right.
Yeah.
Like my logo hasn't changed in 4 years.
No, and I think it shouldn't. I think your logo should stay true for, you should be able to use it for, I don't know, like 5 to 10 years. I mean, what do you think?
I think so too. I mean, unless there's something blatantly wrong with it and it's unclear or difficult to understand, or my logo, most people wouldn't notice that it's changed, but it did change a slight bit. Where maybe a year ago, I had somebody ask which font of mine I used for my logo. And I had to say, oh, it's not one of mine, because I designed my logo before I started creating fonts.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, I should figure that out.
Don't we learn so much from people bringing questions to us and realizing how we can make things that we're offering better?
Yep. Yeah. Listening to other people is like, it's the best way to grow your business, honestly. But my logo did change just a tiny bit because I switched it to one of my own fonts, but visually it looks the same. So now I can say it's mine.
That's awesome. That's great. I want to talk about design, like good versus bad design. So when you see good versus bad design, what's it make you think about a company, even when you don't know anything about the product or services?
Same as anyone else. Like if I trust companies that have great design, and I don't trust companies with bad design.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what the actual quality of the product is. Like you're trying to make a first impression. And I think more than anything, it's design is not necessarily how something looks so much as how clearly it is conveying information. Like great design is actually a tool for communication, and it's not as visual as people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go on a website that maybe is super trendy and visually well designed, I can still be frustrated by the quote, bad design of it, because I don't know what they do or where to get it or anything about their products or what their process looks like. Like, I think we can get so wrapped up in the visual of things and making sure it looks pretty that we forget that great design is actually great communication. Mm-hmm. And so I think good design and bad design depends even more on the clarity of someone's message and the communication of that through design than it does like someone's logo being good or bad. Because there are people who have what I would say are poorly designed logos, but beautifully designed websites in the sense that they communicate very effectively and clearly.
What are some of the easiest things that a business can do to implement good design into their site, social media, packaging, and newsletters?
I would just simplify, stick to a theme and a palette, use the same fonts, use the same colors, but not too many. Like, I think consistency is what most people want when they visit a brand. They want it to feel familiar. Mm-hmm. And they want to remember what it felt like the first time they found your company, the next time they visit your company. And that's also why it's so important to not be changing your stuff up all the time. Because usually it takes, oh gosh, what is it? I think 9 contacts generally to make your first sale. And so that person is seeing your stuff over and over and over and over again before they actually commit to buying your product or your service. And if they don't recognize you on those
over
9 times they see you, then it's just wasted energy. And so I think making sure that whatever it is you're doing, even if it's bad design, mm-hmm. making sure it's consistent is actually more important.
You work predominantly from home. How do you keep yourself motivated throughout the day? And how have you added structure and boundaries to make sure you accomplish each day what your business and what you need?
It takes a lot. I think most people are realizing that right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all having to kind of walk out this new rhythm of working from home where we're having to create structure in our day that used to be created for us. Like I think you realize that you have to kind of babysit yourself a bit more than you would if you are working in an office or with a schedule that someone's holding you accountable to. So I actually, especially when all the stay-at-home orders were first issued, just to kind of cope with the stress that came along with that, because my day-to-day didn't super change, but my mentality completely did. And so I actually, for the first few weeks, created a school schedule for myself because I loved school. And so I would start work at 7:20, and I had all of my hours blocked out. So I had like a 2-hour class where I would do font work. And then I had a 40-minute chunk for customer service and emails. And then another 2-hour chunk after that for client work. And then another 2-hour chunk after that for like marketing and advertising and making sure that like the admin stuff of my business is tight. And then after that, I would have an hour and a half blocked out to do something not work related that was new to me. So I would go on Skillshare and take a couple different classes unrelated to work. I would go for walks. I would paint. Like, that was my elective time in school, just to do something for fun. And that really helped keep me on track, helped give me a lot of balance, and it helped get me back into the rhythm that I'm in now, which is the way I usually operate. And that's writing down my essential tasks for the day and my secondary tasks for the day. And I actually physically write them down on a piece of paper cross them off when I complete them, make sure that my essential tasks are always done before I call it a day. And if I have time or energy for the secondary ones, great. And if I don't, like, I do my best to rest knowing that I have had a productive day and I can actually see it on paper and know that I did everything that absolutely had to be done.
How has COVID-19 impacted your business, and what ways have you adapted? And were there areas of your business that you were neglecting and this pandemic helped you to serve your customers better?
It's impacted more of me personally than it has the business, I think. Again, my day-to-day hasn't changed super significantly. I've been working from home for 4 years. And so technically, nothing is different, but everything is different. And I ended up kind of going through some pretty severe anxiety and swinging between that and depression, depending on the day. And so I've had to adapt my schedule and adopt new, like, mental health practices to make sure I'm okay. And that has in turn actually affected the business a lot too. So because I've had to create some really intense structure to make sure that I'm mentally okay, it's actually made my business a lot more efficient and helped make sure my customer service is on top of it, because that's something that I have always struggled with. But like having blocked out time for it during the day has made it to where it's always done. I have been able to focus more on like administrative stuff that needs to be done because creativity is just a little harder to come by right now. Mm-hmm. And so all in all, like, the business has actually improved as a result because I've, out of necessity, incorporated a lot more structure into my days.
In what ways has this pandemic opened your heart and mind to not only serving your customers in new and more beautiful ways, but also your own family?
It's definitely helped me connect with my audience on a more personal level. I think the combined experience here has made everyone a bit more human and a bit more accessible. And so that's been really fun, actually. And I think for me personally, it's made me a lot more forgiving of myself and helped me extend a lot more grace to myself during the day, where I can get so productivity oriented that I end up talking poorly to myself or getting frustrated with myself or beating myself up for not accomplishing as much as I'd hoped. And it's helped me realize that that's just not as important as taking care of myself, because that impacts my family, that impacts my husband, that impacts the way our house feels at the end of the day. And I want to make sure that remains sacred. And so I think it's more than anything just like increased my awareness of everything and everyone and how we are all connected and how making sure we're taking care of ourselves and each other can improve our lives in every area in and outside of work.
Do you have a mentor? And if so, who do you turn to for advice, especially in times like these?
Well, I don't want to embarrass you, but I've always considered you to be my mentor. I feel a little bit, though, like I've maybe felt like we're dating and we're not.
We're totally dating.
Like, I've changed my relationship status, but I didn't tell you about it until I got on your podcast.
I love that. That's so sweet. Thank you.
But you've always been such an inspiration to me, and I want to be like you when I grow up.
Well, the feeling is mutual. You know how much I just adore you. I adore you and Aaron, and definitely are a constant conversation in our house, just what we hope for our children even. So Jen could be my child, so but
that's not quite true.
Well, but it's, you really, I mean, I very much respect you also, and so thank you. So is there anyone else? Is there somebody that was sweet of you? Is there, do you have somebody else that you kind of turn to that you really, I know we're both huge fans of Donald Miller. Mm-hmm. And so it can even be somebody like that, maybe somebody that's maybe not in your life intimately, but somebody you really turn to for solid, good advice.
I'm so bad at asking for help. And that's something that I absolutely need to get better at. But when I get to that point where I am like, oh my gosh, I can't do this, and I'm freaking out and I need help, like you're always the one I'm like, I need to call Jean. Or that even Aaron is like, you should call Jean. Like when I'm driving him crazy with all of my like freakouts and panics and questions, he's like, you should call Jean.
The thing that's great is that you have started to become a mentor for others too. So now you're able to start giving advice and guide other people. And I just think that's such a beautiful thing too, because I think one of the best things about figuring some things out about yourself and your creativity and your business is when you look around to who else needs this information. And I think you've been really great at having your eyes open to, I've got stuff to share now. I've learned a lot, and I can help others have success too. And I think that's one of the best things, is a successful business owner that's looking around for who to take along on the ride, you know?
Yeah,
and so I love that. How does your creative, what, go ahead.
I think it's important for people to know too that everyone listening to this has something that they can share and something that they can teach. And when Aaron used to teach guitar lessons, he used to joke that you just have to stay one lesson ahead of them. Like, you could be as much of a beginner as they are, but if you're just one lesson ahead, like, you have something to share. And I mean, that's not to say that you shouldn't have expertise and knowledge in your field, but I think it can feel like we have to be absolute professional experts before we can share or help other people, and that's just not true.
Well, and I think back to when we did our first Creatively Made Business class, I was very young in our business, but I still had stuff to share. If I looked back now at that class, I mean, that's why we don't offer it anymore, because it's not good enough to put out, but people learned from it. And then we did it like 7-8 years ago, we did another one and we kind of updated it. But even then, I love that there were things that people could take away. Like you said, even if you're just a couple of lessons, you know, beyond people. So how does creativity look for you during this time of trouble? And in the day-to-day right now, what does that look like? So you talked about painting. You've mentioned painting many times. And so that's something that people might not know that you do, because you do so much in fonts and graphic design work. So is that part of your creativity and how you connect with it?
I think it's a good release. I don't consider it something I do. Like, I don't think, but I also think that's silly, because it is an expression of creativity and it is valid. And just because I'm not pursuing it professionally doesn't mean I'm not doing it. Like, that's a silly.
No, you don't have to sell something for it to be worthy of your time and energy.
Right. And I think with something like painting, you also don't have to be skilled to quote unquote be doing it. Like, anyone can put paint on a canvas. And I don't know. Like, I think finding ways to express creativity outside of work and in a way that is like, well, I can't sell this, or I don't want to sell this, or I don't want to share this with anybody, has been really valuable for me. I think on that note as well, that's kind of all I really have the capacity for right now creatively. I listened to a podcast with Erin the other day that was really good for my heart. It was Rob Bell, and his podcast is called The Robcast. But he was talking with his wife about COVID and everything that's going on. And he was saying that this isn't a time in the world that's bustling with creative energy. And I think that so many of us, with whatever extra time we might find, or time at home, or any of that, like, we're putting on the pressure to create, and we're putting on the pressure to be productive. And well, what else am I doing with this time? And I need to make sure that I'm stewarding it well. And I just, listening to that gave me permission to stop thinking that way, because it's not true. Like, what we're going through right now is a global communal tragedy and trauma. And I think it would be wrong of me to ignore the grief in favor of trying to be productive during this time, and trying to sell and trying to create from a place that my creativity isn't bustling and energetic. Right. And like, it's pretty dormant right now, honestly. And even though I'm putting out new products, those have been in the works for a while. So I think it can look like people are doing things, and it's easy to compare ourselves to others on social media and say, well, this person is taking advantage of this time and putting out courses and doing this or that. And that's great for that person. Maybe if they're healthy. You don't know if they're healthy. And even if,
and like
they
you
are,
said, lots of things that people are seeing at the surface, they were created months ago.
Yeah. And there, maybe people are just like pushing them back up to the surface and pushing advertising out a little bit more. Like, you don't know what's happening on the back end. And I think it's easy to just see it as people being productive during this time, when really, like, that's just not a pressure that you have to feel right now.
I think it matters even your personality and how you're being impacted by this. So it's kind of like I've heard someone say, we're not all on the same, in the same boat. We're all in the same storm. And so we're all in the same storm, but everybody, so if you're feeling creative, that's amazing. And pursue that. If you're not, then also don't feel guilty because you're not creating, or because, like this person said, I don't even know who said it, but just that our boats are all very, very different in how this is impacting us, and not just financially, but emotionally too.
You have permission to be wherever you're at.
So I would like to close with one last question. If you were not a designer and creating fonts, what would Jen Wagner's alternate career choice be?
I always joke that I'd be a bartender. I actually think that would be fun. Like, not at a dive bar, but like a speakeasy.
Yeah, or something. I can see that. I think you make great cocktails.
Well, thank you. So I think that'd be fun. I think more realistically, I would, like, if everything failed tomorrow and I just lost my business, I would probably start another one doing something else. Like, we have our candle business. We've talked about maybe long game starting like a CBD oils business. Like, I just think it's so fun and I love the game. And I don't think I would ever be able to stop.
Yeah. No, I think when it's in your blood, it's there for life.
Yeah.
And if one thing ended, I think you would just start turning, thinking like, what could be next? And so, well, would you please share with our listeners how they can find you, learn more about you, and how to purchase your fonts or take online training if they love design work also?
Yeah, you can find everything you need at www.jenwagner.co, not .com, .co. And my Instagram is the same. It's at jenwagner.co. And you can find all my fonts, all my courses, all my memberships, everything you could possibly need on my website there, or on Creative Market as well at jenwagner.co.
Jen, thanks so much. Great talk. I loved hearing your heart about so many things and a lot of things that we've never talked about before. And so I really loved our time together. So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day to day like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening and see you next time.